from all the way in the back of the food stamp line and straight out of motherfucking the internet, that crack rock and punk rock steady beat drums on. So raise your motherfucking browsers in the air for the good, the bad, and the punk news podcast. Punk News Podcast episode 539. Big week this week at Punk News. Big week. Biggest week all year. People are excited. People are thrilled. People are jumping out of their skeletons. They're so excited. Sam Barrett, why are people so rabid with enthusiasm, going crazy on the internet, super hyped, super excited? They can't contain themselves. National Guard had to be called in a couple of cities. Why are people just going berserk with anticipation, Sam?
Intro.
Oh, I just ripped it off from Leftover Crack. That's the intro to their song Homeopathy.
Oh, Jesus. Well, anyways, maybe that's why everyone is up in arms about everything and is so excited about the internet right now.
And more, why do you think everyone is just going crazy and they're super excited about everything, right? Well, about one specific thing. Why are people so excited about one specific thing right now, and more?
I wonder.
And go ahead.
No, go ahead.
And Hallie Bullet, why do you think people are just they're just gone? They can't contain themselves. Why? Why?
I want to say, but I feel like I don't want to make. It's your announcement. You should announce why everyone's so excited.
August 11th, Architects of Self-Destruction, the Oral History of Leftover Crack. And I almost said the wrong title because I had another title until very recently. Architects of Self-Destruction, the Oral History of Leftover Crack. It's coming out August 11th via Rare Bird Lit. You can pre-order it now. And let me tell you, people, I've been working on this book 4 years, but really 2 years. It's been me and Brad Logan of Leftover Crack, of F-, of the Adolescents, of the OZ Hairs, as they'll read about in the book. Also of Black Flag's Practice Space, which you'll read about in the book. Brad and I have been working on this pretty intensely for the past 2 years. We interviewed everybody in the band. We interviewed Sturgeon, Alec, Aura. We interviewed Squirt, Peasant Shane of Choking Victim. We interviewed Alice Auer of Leftover Crack. We interviewed who else? Members of Mischief Brew, Penny Rimbaud. We interviewed Dave Dichter. We interviewed Joe Jack Tatum, Jesse Michaels of Operation Ivy, Steve Albini, employees of Epitaph Records, employees of Hellcats, employees of Fat Records. We interviewed Fat Mike. We interviewed employees of Alternative Tentacles. We interviewed mental health professionals. We interviewed van drivers. We interviewed almost 100 people to put together a comprehensive, interesting, balanced, but not balanced, and I'll tell you why in a second, Oral History of Leftover Crack. If you've ever read Please Kill Me, the fantastic book by Legs McNeil, we use that as our format, and that it's one person talking, then another person talking, then another person talking, and it tells the entire history of Leftover Crack from the destruction of Choking Victim through the present day, and I'm extremely proud of it. I think Brad's pretty – I know Brad's very proud of it, and Brad and I went through it. We worked with Sturgeon to go through it as well. Oh, Mikey Yerg's in the book. Mikey Yerg, interestingly, being the only semi-normal person in a band of maniacs when he was in SFH. Hallie Bullet, Mikey Yerg, he's a generally normal guy, right?
I mean, only as normal as, like, all of us are. Like, we're all, like, yeah. I mean, yes, he's mostly normal. I mean, except that, like, we're all, like, anyone in punk is, like, kind of, like, weird, right? Like, when we used to tour with him, he would only eat McDonald's. He stopped doing that, but he used to eat McDonald's for 3 meals a day. You know, everyone's got their quirks, man. Mikey Erg included, but he's a doll.
Well, they had Mikey Erg, the doll in the band of maniacs. He's in the book. And I would say it's what's the word I'm looking for? Non-biased, but it's extremely biased. But it's biased as to both poles. The core idea behind the band is Leftover Crack is an extremely interesting band. Everyone in that band is extremely intelligent. I mean, there's two people in that band with doctoral degrees, or at least master degrees right now. And not that means you're smart, but like Sturgeon is incredibly smart. Aura, Bobby Gian is incredibly smart. Brad Lowe is incredibly smart. Alec was incredibly smart. it's crazy how smart the people in that band are. And, you know, they have all these extremely progressive causes and lyrics, anti-sexism, anti-homophobia, anti-racism. Also, you know, discussion about capitalism, discussion about how world affairs are affected by North America activities. Extremely intelligent band. We talk about all that. But we also talk about the negative side of the band. People think, I'll say to the band, so like people say, like, my band's dysfunctional. And I'll be like, well, what do you mean your band's dysfunctional? And they'll be like, well, sometimes when we're driving on the interstate and somebody wants to stop at the rest stop to go pee and other people don't want to, oh, it's a whole thing. I'm like, oh, really? Because this band has literally fist fought each other, thrown each other out of the side of a van. They've gone behind each other's backs to backstab each other. They are maniacs. They really are maniacs because they're also bright and they're also creative. And a lot of them have issues. And so I don't want to say it's a not biased book, but it's biased in that we've got people that are big fans of Leftover Crack themselves, talking about the virtues. And we have people that are not Leftover Crack fans, talking about how much they hate Leftover Crack and why they hate Leftover Crack. And also members of Leftover Crack talking about why they hate Leftover Crack and other members of Leftover Crack. And it's something else. I'm really proud of how it came out. I think it truly is exactly what a fan – Sometimes as a fan, you'll read a biography or whatever, and it'll be cool, but it'll just be a puff piece, or if it's not a puff piece, it's like, I got on drugs, but then I got off drugs, and now everything's great. That's not this book at all. This book, we didn't really have a theme when we did this book. Well, the theme being is the good and the bad side of the band. However, the theme that came out was drugs are bad, okay? and what's interesting... What's interesting is the band has a lot of pro-drug lyrics, but those members are actually, well, you know, like, I don't want to glorify drugs because it does have a really bad other side, too. And not that the book is strictly anti-drugs, because it's definitely not that, but I feel it gives a full vision of everything. And as a fan, you get the interest. As a fan, you get the facts. This happened, then that happened. You get the opinions. You get the conflict of opinions, people disagreeing about things. But also, it's not like the Motley Crue book, The Dirt, where it's just this crazy thing happened and this crazy thing happened. It also underlines how intelligent these people are. So I think it's a great balance of wild rock and roll book and discussion of politics and the band's values and anarcho-punk. And my favorite thing about the book, I think, is it is amazing. I mean, we interviewed almost 100 people and we did over 200 interviews because we interviewed like I interviewed Brad probably 30 or 40, 50 times. I interviewed Sturgeon 20, 25 times. Brad interviewed Sturgeon 20, 30 times. You know, Alec got interviewed probably 5 times, 10 times. Aura got interviewed 10 times. A lot of different interviews with a lot of different people. But what my favorite thing is people talking and how different people's memory will be. I'll just give you an example. Is there's one part where they're playing Rebellion Fest in Blackpool, and Sturgeon takes off all his clothes and puts his sock around his wiener like the Red Hot Chili Peppers and starts like doing like the Red Hot Chili Peppers like wiener dance or whatever. And Greg Daly, famous Philadelphia tour booker, tour manager. How do you know Greg Daly?
No, I don't.
So anyways, he's like, Brad got so mad that he just packed up his guitar, walked over, put it in the case and walked off the stage. Meanwhile, Brad's recollection is that that didn't happen at all and that Brad played the entire show and was laughing and, like, dancing along with Sturgeon. Like, their memories are completely opposite of each other's. And I don't think either thinks they're lying. I just think that just goes to show how the memory is not as trustworthy as people might think it is. So that's out on that's out on Rare Bird Books. There's a couple of really cool pre-order packages. You can get just the book. You can get the book with an exclusive T-shirt that you can only get during the pre-order period and will not be made afterwards. And you can also get the book with the T-shirt with a zine. The zine is a companion to the book that has stuff that didn't fit in the book. It's got additional interviews. It's got a gigantic interview with Penny Rimbaud. It's got an interview with Butch Riley. It's got a band chart. It's got pictures, flyers. So it's specifically a companion to the book. And I'm super psyched. It's coming out August 10, right before Punk Rock Bowling. LOC's playing Punk Rock Bowling. And I'm psyched, man. I think it's going to be rad. I think it's going to be one for the books, literally.
It sounds amazing, John. It just sounds like, and I love oral histories for the exact reason that you're saying. Like, it's so fun when people just like completely contradict what one another is saying. And yeah, like just like what you said, you're like, wow, we all are so convinced that we remember things the way they happen. And obviously lots of us are wrong because so many people remember events differently. So yeah, I'm like, I'm super psyched for you. And I'm psyched for this.
Thank you. Thank you. I will say I am certainly somewhat, you know, Leftover Crack has a reputation, and to a degree that reputation is earned. And I guess, I don't know if unfortunately is the right word, but when you have a reputation, sometimes you get more punishment than your reputation should, just because that's how it works, you know? And so we'll see how rocky this is. It might be rocky. I don't know. But honestly, had I known how dysfunctional and how crazy these people are before starting this book, I might have had cold feet, you know, but too late now.
I think you love the drama. I think you love it. So this is a great project for you.
Well, listen, I'm psyched. You can get it at Rare Bird Lit, which let me give you the website right now. I'm psyched. And honestly, it seems like the fans are psyched. And I'm really like, as a fan myself, it's rarebirdlit.com, rarebirdlit.com. But if you just Google Architects of Self-Destruction, it pops on up. But I'm psyched. As a fan, I think it's fantastic. I think it's exactly the kind of book fans want, but it's also, I think it's really well done. So I'm really proud of it. I'm pleased, and we'll see, you know, I assume once it comes out, they'll pretty much burn every other rock book in shame. Because it's not as good as Architects of Self-Destruction. So. And more, the name.
Yes.
Too hoity-toity or hoity-toity enough? That was a debate. I wanted just self-destruction, but Brad thought that was too flat, and he wanted Architects of Self-Destruction. So we negotiated. Brad and I actually did a really good job of like discussion and negotiating throughout this entire book. And more, what do you think? Self-destruction? And honestly, people seem to really dig the title, so I think Brad might have been right, and I'm glad I negotiated, or compromised, rather. Architects of Self-Destruction, too hoity-toity, or just hoity-toity enough for a rock biography?
It sounds so cool. It's a really good title.
Well, there we go. If Edmore says it, it must be true. So listen, people, I'm going to say it again. I'm going to be talking about it a lot. I'm going to be talking about it all the way. Oh, also, we're going to be doing it's going to be a podcast specifically about the book, 12 to 16 episodes. It's going to be me and Brad interviewing people in the book about their own life around the book. We're going to do an interview with Mikey Erg, interview with Aura of the Slackers and Leftover Crack, interview with Witch Hunt, interviews with just Brad, interviews with Dick Lucas, tons of interviews. And listen, people, buy the book. What can I say? It's only $20 for the book. You know, $20. You spend $20 at Starbucks. So listen, you know, support me. Anyways, August 10th, I'm psyched. You can always reset podcast at punknews.org. And we got some very nice mail this week, and I should have had it ready to go, but I don't. So let me pull that on up. Meanwhile, Sam Barrett, what's going on in your world while I pull up this email?
Nothing much. I think we're talking about something that's happening in New York soon. That happened in New York. You know, weird things. Possible super spreader event. Who knows?
This is from Thomas, and you can always reach a podcast at punknews.org. This is Thomas P. Dear M, Hallie, Sam, and John. And he spelled my name wrong. Thanks, Thomas.
How's it spelled?
J-O-N, which is Jonathan, but I'm J-O-H-N, which is an older name. Jonathan, medieval era name. John, bronze era name. So, wanted to mail in to say I'm enjoying the special episodes. The extra music is superb. I'd like to ask for more, please. One of my favorite episodes was back in maybe 2019 when John, spelled wrong again, Adam and Tom did a sort of review show. They each pulled an old album and a new album, I think, did a little dissecting, interspersed with a couple of songs for each. Can I suggest more review shows? This seemed like the perfect medium for those. I don't have time to read about new music, but I do basically have podcasts running in my ears all day as I work. You could record solo, just quick short episodes on an album, play a couple of tracks. Get in and go. Actually, that's better than written articles, I reckon. That's from Thomas P. P.S. I love when you rag on my favorite bands. Strung Out, Death by Stereo, etc. I guess because I arrived at punk to metal, I have preference for that end of the spectrum. Punk to metal to metalcore. Peace from Thomas P.
Love it. I was just thinking about that, about how, like, yeah, like, you definitely opened the door for all of us to be, like, thinking about, like, extras to do on the podcast. And I really just have to, like, find the brain space to think about it, because I think it's I think that would be so fun to do.
Yeah, I definitely want Sam, Hallie, and him to do some – and I was thinking – which I was going to talk about this off mic, but we might do on mic – is M and Sam and Hallie, if you guys – don't have the time or the equipment to mix an episode, I can just record it and then I can mix it separately. So we can do that too. So yeah.
Awesome.
And all right, this is from Keith T. Keith T says, he must have just got this today. Dear John, congrats on the book. I'm excited to read it. Did you have any worries about doing the book? That's from Keith T. Well, like I said, I did, but it's too late now. And honestly, like, the most interesting books are people that are complex. Everyone in this band is extremely complex, more complex than most. Some of them might be some of the most complex people I've ever interviewed. I'm psyched. And yeah, man, we'll see. Ask me again in 2 months. You can always reach the podcast at punknews.org. We love getting your mail. I'm going to play Leftover Crack Track. And then we'll come back and start the show proper. This is I don't want to say a deep cut, because Leftover Crack only has like 45 or 50 songs. But there's a System Fucked with Jesse Michaels and Leftover Crack. And we talk about this in the book. And this is Leftover Crack. And when we come back, we'll be talking about a very divisive topic in the punk community. Very divisive. Nobody. And that was Leftover Crack, rarebirdlit.com, buy my book. Now let's get the show started proper. The infomercial is over, but it'll resume next week. This past weekend, a very divisive event happened in New York City. It was this weekend. Black and Blue Productions, who throw an annual festival called Black and Blue Fest, I think, and they throw a lot of shows throughout the year. They threw a show in Tompkins Square Park. The bands playing were Madball, Murphy's Law, Blood Clot, The Capturers, and Wisdom in Chains. And what was surprising is there was at least 2,000 people there, maybe 2,500. And if you watch the video, it seemed, at least the people in the front of the stage, no masks at all. People climbing on top of each other. And it was crazy. And I was like, isn't that like illegal, right? Or I don't know if, illegal is the right word, I guess. But isn't that like not permitted? Like, even though it's outdoor right now, like, isn't like close gatherings of that many people not permissible? Well, as it turns out, that New York's Channel 11 did some investigation. And it turned out that the permit said that about 100 people will show up. And that the event was a political rally with music and speakers. And it's unclear if they said it's September 11th memorial as one of the reasons of having it or not. There was conflicting info there. And so the reason the New York's Park Department granted the permit was because they thought 100 people were going to be there, but 2,500 people wound up showing up. And I was surprised that the show didn't get shut down, honestly. Like, you would think that would get shut down right away, but it just didn't. And so honestly, in the web sphere, I was amazed in that there was extremely divisive results in the punk community. Some people were like, listen, we all need to play cool. This is insane and irresponsible. We're sort of getting through COVID. We don't need everyone to set us back now when we're on the cusp of taking this thing out. The other side was, well, people have already been vaccinated. People can make their own decisions. Don't tell me what to do. If you don't want to be there, then don't be there. John Joseph of Blood Clot and formerly of Cro-Mags had a statement. I'll read a statement. Yesterday in Tompkins Square Park, history was made. Well over 2,000 people came out to a free show by the people for the people. It was a blast. We raised money for the FDNY burn unit and fed people organic plant-based meals. And let me say this to all the chumps and biatches talking shit. This is a grown man. For the last year in New York City, there were protests. Tens and thousands of people in the streets. Some rioting and looting, engaging in bias attacks. Nobody said shit. The media condoned it. On 420, and this, I'm going to stop here and say this is me quoting this whole time. On 420, thousands filled Washington Square Park, sharing blunts and weed pipes, no mask. Again, nobody said shit. This was our fucking protest. This was our rally. People came out from all over the country and enjoyed live music. Those that didn't want to come home stayed away. Good. Nobody missed their ass. They were free to live in fear, hide under their table, and talk shit on social media. I want to thank blah, 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 blah. PMA was had by all. Smiling faces were everywhere. We needed this, and I hope other cities in the United States and around the world do the same. Don't care what they may say. We got that PMA. Of course, quoting a famous Bad Brains song. I do want to point out that, of course, in the punk community, there's always been what I'll say the reactionary contingent that is actually really just like far-right people. And I guess they like punk because it's, quote, rebel. But they're not really rebels. At any rate, what I would say is people in the punk community that I would not expect to be pro this event were pro this event. And interestingly, there seemed to be a link between those people and the people that are really into like crypto coins and stuff like that. I've got a lot of thoughts. Who wants to kick it off? Or do people just want me to kick it off?
Kick it off, John.
All right. John's jumping on the grenade. But that's all right. That's all right.
No, do it.
This is stupid and irresponsible. I mean, like, it really is. If there's one thing that I've learned in life, and I've maybe learned two or three things in life total, but if there's one thing I've learned in life is if you're winning, if you're in a conflict, if you have a goal, when you're about to get to the finish line, when you're about to knock somebody out, I don't necessarily mean physically, but even physically, but when you're winning the fight, that is not the time to relax and say, we did it. That's a time to kick in your last bit of energy and really slam it on home, slam it in the end zone, take the dude out. And that is not what this is. And this is how you get set back. And I think it's people. It's a combination of people saying I don't believe in COVID. Ironically, the people a lot of people that were saying I don't believe in COVID 8 months ago, those people seem to be the ones that want to get the vaccine the most, which blew my mind. You know, I've got some aunts and uncles that were like, oh well, COVID's going to go away after the election, which it sort of did because someone acted strategically after the election. But those people are the ones that are like, oh well, should I get Moderna or Pfizer? Oh, you can get it at Walgreens if you look online at 3:30 in the morning. I'm like, you were literally saying COVID doesn't exist 7 months ago, and now you're like the COVID expert, like the vaccine expert, which really infuriates me. Anyways, it just goes to show that punk is not monolithic. And one of the things that you can take from this is in punk rock right now, if you don't agree, and I agree with this following statement very much, is there's a certain narrow line of thinking. If you don't agree with that, then you're horrible, you're a bad person, and you're the worst thing in the world. I think that is a terrible mentality, and I think that's how Proud Boys and QAnon takes off, is if you demonize people from even deviating a little bit from the standard line of thought, then they're just going to get farther and farther away and get creepier and creepier. And so I do think that's what – I think this is wrong. I think it's bad, but I think people are kind of tired of being told by a certain majority or even a minority of people that if you disagree with me, you're a bad person, instead of I don't agree with you and here's why I don't agree with you. And so I think that's why there are a lot of people in punk rock that are kind of, you know, reactionary right into sketchy stuff. But also that's always kind of been in punk rock, because punk rock is an outsider format. Punk rock is an edgier, a crazier format. And I do think that people that have sought to kind of minimize that has made the crazier element get crazier. So I think this is stupid and bad. I will say, in John Joseph's statement, I see a lot of things between the lines there, and I think everybody saw a lot of things between the lines there. And also, I will point, there's a lot of inaccuracies. The rioting was not condoned. To the contrast, people were like, you should not riot at Black Lives Matter movements. And also, what a weird thing to pick on in something that has nothing to do with Black Lives Matter at all. Like, why are you bringing that into it? That's got nothing to do with what we're talking about, you know? So why is that your to go? It's like the guy that like hates gay people. And he wakes up and he's like, I hate gay people. And all he's going to talk about how much he hates gay people. And it's like, well, why do you think about gay people that much? You know, you know, and it turns out that he gets caught getting a blowjob in like some public bathroom or something. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's always, that's how it always is. You know what I mean? Like, and so the point being is, why is that at the forefront of your mind? Why is that your to go to attack when you feel as though you're under fire? And so, you know, I think a lot of people can read a lot of things between the lines here. And I will say it's ironically that in a rather lengthy paragraph that is, this person's an asshole, that person's an asshole, we're right, you're wrong, you're wrong. Meanwhile, PMA, talk to you later. So that's my opinion. I think this is foolish and irresponsible. I'm glad Madball is kind of laying low, just because I like Freddie Madball. Like, Freddie Madball took a lot of heat in the late 90s and early 2000s, and it was undeserved. Freddie Madball just loves hardcore, and he loves playing hardcore, and a lot of it is kind of good. And so I was disappointed to see Freddie Madball was playing this, but I'm glad that he didn't feel the need to insert himself in this conversation. I think he's doing the wise thing and just taking it on the chin and laying low, and for him it'll go away, you know. And I like Freddie. You know, I think Freddie made the bad choice here, but everyone makes a bad choice here and there, you know. And so I would say the people that are pushing back harder, that says more than the people that are just kind of, you know, laying low. That's my opinion.
Yeah, John Joseph's behavior around this is just—it's baffling. It's completely baffling.
I don't think it's baffling at all. I think it's quite
well for him, right? Yeah. Yeah. No, I know what you're saying, but it's like, I don't know, like my first reaction to this story, when I just like basically just was reading like the headline, I was like, oh, okay, well, you know, like I lived a half a block from Tompkins for like many, many years. And like, I have a lot of fond memories of hardcore shows there. That's just kind of like what happens at Tompkins. You do have to say to the Parks Department that it's a rally. You kind of have to, because they're not going to give you the, even normally they just like kind of won't give you the permit. Otherwise you have to say that it's a rally, or like, you have to say that it's like political or religious. Otherwise the Parks Department probably won't approve your permit. And so, yeah, like hardcore, like promoters figured that out many years ago. And there's like a really rich history of hardcore shows in this park. It's also, it would be a really, really hard park to control how many people come to your show. It'd be just difficult. Like, it's a public park, and I don't, you know. So my first reaction was like, oh, they tried to throw a show, people are so antsy that like everyone and their brother showed up to this show, and like it got out of control, and like, well, geez, like I hope people had fun, and I hope they were safe. And then I see all these images of everyone maskless, no one's being safe. And then, yeah, the John Joseph stuff is like just so shitty. Like, yeah, to attack Black Lives Matter, like, why, dude? Also, any pictures or footage that you look of those protests, people are masked. So like there ends your comparison right there. And that goes to what you're saying, John. It's like, well, why are you just taking this as any opportunity to just talk shit about Black Lives Matter? Like, what's your issue, dude? Because like, really, you can't compare them. Those were people that were, you know, they were protesting something super important, and they were all masked. They were, you know, you can't find images of people not masked. I'm sure you can find images of a few people, but like really by and large, people were masked. So I don't really, it just was so confusing to me that, that he was like choosing to like take pot shots at Black Lives Matter. And then, you know, and then if you read further, like he had a whole other statement, because I guess they had gotten criticism for like applying for like a political rally when it wasn't one. And he was like, well, it actually was one. And what we were protesting was the city's response to COVID and all these draconian rules and the lockdown that was completely unnecessary and shut down small businesses for no reason and greedy politicians. I mean, he just went like on and on and on this like completely insane tirade that I was like, okay, well now I'm not with you at all. Like, I'm just not with you. Like, this is bananas. I mean, I don't know that he represents like the opinions of everyone that put it sounds like he's definitely in lockstep with like whoever was the main promoter. I don't remember that guy's name, but whoever actually applied for the permits, it sounds like they kind of wanted to throw an event where they would like sort of put up their middle finger to the city for having tried to keep people safe all this time. And it's the whole thing is really unfortunate to me. I don't know. Sam, you're in the city. What are your thoughts about this?
So I'm in the city and I've known of the event for a while, and I normally never go to Black and Blue Bowl for the reasons of my normal safety. I like hardcore. I do. But there's just certain times where I will not go see a hardcore show, and usually Black and Blue Bowl is it.
So, Sam, you mean safety just because the dancing is totally crazy, or you mean other reasons?
All of the above.
Fair enough.
But, you know, my thing was when I saw the footage, and I was baffled because the, you know, irresponsibility of everyone involved, right? And two, when I found out that they put 100 people on the application, I was like, how is this even possible? Because if you think about the history of Black and Blue Bowl, they sell out places like Webster Hall, you know? I was like, every year they put on their party, it's usually sold out. So if you give people ample time, they're going to clear their calendars, especially now, since, you know, it's not like we're doing anything. And, you know, everyone's itching for normalcy, right? Everyone's itching for a show. Of course this was going to be a shit show. Like, you know, I was just telling my husband, I was like, there's no way in hell you're going to catch me there. and, you know, I saw a bunch of my friends on social media did show up, but they were masked. And I'm like, you know, thank God you're masked, but, you know, the rest of them are not. So, you know, this doesn't change. This really doesn't change because, like, even the CDC, like, they lifted restrictions, like, recently, right? Like, yesterday or something like that for people that are vaccinated. I don't think most of New York is vaccinated yet for, you know, herd immunity. So because, you know, they just gave the ability to everyone to be able to get their vaccines if they want to recently. So I would have to say that I don't think that everyone is 100% vaccinated. Yeah, it was really upsetting to see that happened. Because, you know, this affects me, I guess, really affects me because I'm in the city. And, you know, we want to get back to normal as quickly as possible, but we need to do this together. And clearly, this event showed me that we're not doing anything together. I'm just on my own island with a mask on, even though I don't have to. But, you know, yeah, it's a lot. You know, then I just felt like everyone involved, you know, they were just trying to make, like, they were saying a lot of harshly worded statements and saying things that hopefully they don't mean, but I have a feeling they mean it, really, and bring in things that did not make sense, like Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter have nothing to do with this event or a hardcore show and other things, you know, so I guess we'll just be stuck in a perpetual COVID state for a little while longer. I know. It sucks.
Now, I was so surprised to see pictures of M. Moore there in the front row. I didn't even understand how she got down from Canada. M. Moore, how was the show?
Well, I went on the most crowded plane I could find. I just took all of the virus that's up here, brought it down.
Import it. Nice.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I mean, M. Moore, what's your crowd killing style? Like you do the pit foo, ninja kicks, high swings. What's your style?
All of it. It's nice. It's like a Tasmanian devil kind of situation. I think my proudest moment, this is real. I was in the pit at a show and there was this man and he was very, very large and I was able to like push him.
And yes.
I was very proud of myself that day.
I would like to have seen that.
Well, the question is, do you think people, is this going to cause people to say, you know what, let's just cool it off for just 3 more months. It's already been like 15 months. Let's just cool it off for like 3 more. Or is this going to what's the word, embiggen people to be like, yeah, let's do shows right now, you know?
I mean, it just definitely hurt. It just hurt everyone, right? Because now it is just like, I just feel like in terms of trying to get back to live music shows, now there's just been like such a breach of trust between the city and like, you know, promoters, music goers, you know, that I do feel like it's just, I feel like the city was already going to be super wary of, you know, live music shows happening again. And I feel like this is a big setback. We'll see.
Well, speaking of pain, Rudimentary Peni, they've released their first album in 13 years, 12 years, a while. The new album is called The Great War, and it's out on Sealed Records, which is a sublabel of La Vida Es Un Mus. Surprisingly, it was actually recorded around 10 years ago or so. Even more surprising, and I don't, honestly, no one's even picked up on this yet, but I'm going to mention it in my review and then pat myself on the back for having more punk cred than everybody else. All the lyrics in this album are taken from Wilfred Henry Owen, who's a famous poet. Nick Blinko actually already did one song where he did a song called The Chances when he released an album in 2000. He released a book in 2009 that came with a CD of a song, The Chances, which is just him kind of reading a poem over a very sparse backing line. The new album is short, fast, punchy, but it's unique in that all the lyrics are taken from Wilfred Henry Owen. Blinko usually writes most of his own lyrics or the other band members. Also, it's unclear if Grant and Greville, the other two members of Rudimentary Peni, are on this. I'm assuming they are, but I'm not sure. I don't see any credits in the booklet. And also, the Chances single is just Nick Blinko, so I'm not even sure. I've got a lot of thoughts on this. Also, the concept of the album is World War One, The Great War. Who wants to kick it off?
Well, I think you should kick it off, but I did have a question, which was, do you know, I think I know from your write-up on it that this was recorded like a few years ago, but it's just coming out now. Do you know why that is?
I don't know why that. This is speculation, but there is something to this in that, like I said, Blinko did record that track, The Chances, about 12 or 13 years ago, Blinko has this recording has a very, very raw sound. In fact, it's the rawest sounding Rudimentary P&I record, honestly, since their first two EPs, just Rudimentary P&I and Farce. Not quite as raw as those, but relatively raw, because even Death Church, well, Death Church is pretty raw sounding too, I guess. So I maybe it's as raw as Death Church, their first proper album. Blinko has been extremely direct in saying Nick Blinko has what? Nick Blinko has substantial mental health issues. He was in a mental institution for a little while in the 90s and late 80s. And since then, he's had a lot of issues. I don't know exactly what his deal is, if you will, but I think he doesn't like to go outside, and I think he doesn't like to interact with people too much. But I don't know that. That's just my guess. And, you know, I do know that he was basically living in the house. I don't want to say who, but he was living in the house of another somewhat famous outsider musician, because that person was kind of just taking care of him because he couldn't – what I heard is he couldn't function on his own. And I have some evidence to suggest that was accurate. So Blinko has been extremely explicit in that when he takes – is it psychotropic medication? Is that what it's called, psychotropic? I don't know. When he takes medication that is designed to combat schizophrenia and hallucinations and mania and those kinds of things, it greatly affects his creativity, and he doesn't feel nearly as creative. And he actually I think he talked about it very briefly in his book that came out, in which I am cited as a source. So I think my guess is that he's maybe been taking his medication since then, and that's why he hasn't recorded music, because he's doesn't feel as creative when he's on those medications. Interestingly, in Architects of Self-Destruction, we talk about mental health a lot, and we interview a bunch of punks and mental health professionals, and they talk about this exact issue with Nick Blinko. And they had an interesting perspective in that they wanted to be very clear that even though Nick Blinko might have severe creativity diminishment from psychotropic medications, that is not the effect that everybody has, and some people are even more creative. So they don't want to discourage people from taking, I guess, what you would say is a necessary medication. And so I think Hallie's question is, why was this shelved for so long? My informed guess, that is a guess and is not 100% based on facts, is I think this was recorded during the period where Blinko had decided that he made the choice to basically be steady with psychotropic medications at the cost of creativity. And that's why the lyrics are taken from Wilfred Henry Owen. And I think I'm guessing that Greville and Grant are not on this record. And so I think Blinko wasn't sure if he wanted to call it an actual Rudimentary P&I record. And this part is pure speculation. But now that it's been about 10 years, he wanted to put it out because it definitely should be out. So that's my wild guess based on sparse facts. Like in archaeology, like, oh, you see, this was a fish cult that worshipped the fish on the lunar, you know, on the lunar month. And what did you base it on, Professor? I found this half-broken pot that had half a fish on it, and I think that's a moon. You know?
Well, thank you for piecing together the hieroglyphs for us.
No, that's my guess. Anyway, I was mildly disappointed when I first learned that these lyrics are not Blinko's lyrics. And then I heard the album and I'm like, this is a masterpiece. And it is a masterpiece. I got to do a review. I kind of want to give it a 10 out of 10, but it's not out of 10 out of 10, because a 10 out of 10, in my mind, should be culturally significant and signal some sort of change. It doesn't do that. It's an amazing Rudimentary P&I record, so I think it's a 9 out of 10, in that I love how raw it sounds. And see, what I love about all the – you can break Rudimentary P&I into – before Pope Adrian the 37th, when Blinko went into a mental institution, and after Pope Adrian the 37th. And all the records after Pope Adrian the 37th kind of follow the same format. 10 tracks, short songs, aggressive, and few lyrics per song, and the lyrics are amazing. But what's interesting is all those albums, they each deviate from each other in a certain way. And I love how this one is in that format, but deviates. It deviates in that it's got this incredibly raw, berserk sound. And I also liked how he is focusing on Wilfred Henry Owen's lyrics, similar to how he focused on H.P. Lovecraft with the one of the greatest albums of all time, Cacophony, the second album from 1989, absolute masterpiece. So I actually dig how he's kind of circling back on that theme under the new format, and I also dig how a lot of these songs have a variety of sounds. Some RP track albums, every song kind of has the same intensity, which I dig. This one's got actually a lot of variety, a lot of like slow songs, some fast songs. I love how on some songs, sometimes he sings, and then sometimes he just kind of starts talking to you. And I like how sometimes his voice just changes randomly, which is what he's an absolute master at. And I love how it's focusing on World War One. It's like, well, who's thinking about World War One now? And the answer is, well, maybe we should be learning a lesson from World War One now, you know. And I just think it's everything that I needed that I didn't know that I needed. And I absolutely love it. And Blinko is the champ. He really is. And I'm so glad this got released. And it's another fantastic entry to Rudimentary Peni. It doesn't radically reinvent Rudimentary Peni, but it just goes to show the magic is still there. And no one is like Rudimentary Peni. And Blinko is like, what, 55 now? 60? I'm filled with pride for Nick Blinko. In that, like, this dude's 55, 60, maybe he was 50 when he recorded this. And this is friggin' berserk sounding. And then, I'm not trying to be a dick, but we get, like, 30-year-old punkers. Like, I'm tired of punk. I'm going to do acoustic now. I'm so old. I'm so tired. It's like, bro, you're 30. Listen to friggin' Nick Blinko, who's tearing people's heads off at 55 in the mental institution, going off his psychotropic medications, singing about World War One. You know what I mean? This album rocks. Blinko's the champ. And if Grand and Greville are on it, kudos to them, too. I don't know if they are. It's great. It's great. It's great.
There's your review. You just need somebody to like just need to dictate that to somebody. No, I just killed the momentum of that conversation. Sorry.
I just think that John misses Adam and he's gone batshit crazy without Adam these days.
Listen, if there's one thing Rudimentary Peni taught us, if there's one thing Leftover Crack has taught us, you have to evolve. You have to move on. You can't stay stagnant. Rudimentary Peni always evolving and more. I know you like the heavy stuff.
Yes.
What do you think of this?
This was great.
That's right.
I didn't know the thing about the Wilfred Henry Owen lyrics, but that makes a lot of sense. That's really, really cool. It has such a like an atmosphere around it, you know, like I was listening to it today and I made a mistake. I was like, I put it on and then I was trying to do something. Like I was, I know. I zoned out and I was just listening to it. And then I was like getting all these images, you know what I mean? And it was just like, this is so good. And then like, you know, it was over in like the blink of an eye and it's like, no, come back. You know, I need to listen to it again. But it's so good. I agree. Nick Blinko is 100% the champ. It's good.
Hallie Bullet, what'd you think of Rudy P?
You know, I have like trouble like accessing it because there's, I don't know. I'm like, you know, I'm just being a normie and like waiting for like a hook that's not totally coming or, you know, but I love like how enthusiastically you both just talked about this. I definitely, and maybe I need to do what you did. I just need to put it on and just like bask in it. You know, I love when people, I mean, you know, listen, I love to hear original lyrics because I like to know what's going on internally for an artist always. But like, I also love when people can just take another artist's work and use it as a launching pad. And so I'm super into the idea that this is all, you know, like that these lyrics are all poetry written by somebody else. I think that's rad.
Laura Jane Grace had a funny tweet that I agreed with, and I'm going to paraphrase because basically, Laura Jane Grace said, you know, in the age of the internet, like everyone's accessible and like all these mysterious people aren't that mysterious. And Laura Jane Grace was like, please let Nick Blinko stay mysterious. That is the best way for him to be. And I agree. I agree. You
know. I love that.
And more, play a track and we'll come back.
All right. So this is what I was going to play last week. And then I was rudely interrupted because my computer decided to be a...
Oh, I thought it was like one of us like shut up, Amber.
No. No, my computer shut down and it was a bad scene. So anyways, this song is Very good. So with everything that's going on with the pandemic and everything, you have to remember the frontline workers, you know, everything. Don't be selfish. Don't be stupid. We're in the, you know, the last bit of it. Hang on, wear your mask, wash your hands. Remember, it doesn't just affect you. It also affects frontline workers. Well, and everyone else. But this band, they're called Worst Nurse. They're a punk band out of Australia. All of the members are nurses. And they have a song called Dedication Doesn't Pay the Rent. It's about the 1986 Victoria nurse strike. And it's off of their 2018 EP, Hot, 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 which is really good. And they have a new EP coming soon. So this is Dedication Doesn't Pay the Rent by Worst Nurse.
And we are back with an M More band, Illuminati Hotties. Illuminati Hotties have released a new video. The video is Moya, and it is a standalone single. And for right now, and it was directed by singer Katie Newhoff. Katie Newhoff is not the singer. The singer is Sarah Tudzin, And Illuminati Hotties last released an album called Free Illuminati Hotties. This is not the one you were waiting for, because they had a conflict with their label. And more, tell us about that conflict. What did you think of this track?
So, their label was holding their recordings hostage. They were just generally being tools about it. So, like, they had a whole dispute, and it went on, I think, for a year or more. And then Free IH, that was the band putting out music, like, the whole record is basically a fuck you to their record label. And it's like, oh, yeah, we're going to put out music. That's not the album that was a part of everything. But, you know, they're like, we're going to put out music. We're going to have fun with it. You know, we're going to regain our creative control. We're going to regain our control over the band. So, like, that's continuing, because when the video and the song was launched, they also announced their own label, which is Snack Shack Tracks, and it's an imprint of Hopeless Records. So now hopefully their label woes are gone, and they have more control over what they put out and how well, and the business side of everything. So hopefully everything works out for them. This song is, it's fun. I like it. I really like Sarah's voice, because, again, like, she changes her voice, like, quite a bit, and, or not quite a bit, but, like, a little bit, and, like, it always sounds really, really cool, and there's always, like, again, an element of fun to it, an element of just very interesting sounds. So, I would definitely recommend it. And I was reading about the video, and so the video is inspired by the video for D'Angelo's untitled How Does It Feel, where I guess he's kind of doing the same thing. So that's always interesting too, when like, an artist takes something that's within popular culture and then, like, subverts it and makes it kind of their own. So, yeah, I was a big fan of this, and looking forward to them putting out new music, and hopefully we get the one we've been waiting for soon. What were your guys' takes on the track?
I did not love it, but I did feel the video was kind of like an art piece. Like, if it was like some kind of contemporary art project or something. I do find it interesting, you know, and now you just told us the story about, you know, how this record label came into play. It's like, I do find it interesting when people, you know, create their own record labels just so that they can control everything that they put out. You know, that kind of seems, it kind of sucks, because essentially, like, you know, that tells us that whoever they were working with sucks. But it's kind of rad, because, you know, they're doing things their own, like, their own way, and, you know, and they're now going to be controlling whatever they put out. So, yes, things might get a little wacky since they're now controlling everything. Things might actually get, you know, good or bad or whatever. But I just find that entire, like, thing really interesting.
Yeah, I thought, first of all, Em, you always find the coolest stuff. Like, I love this song. I love this song. I like it's got this really angular verse, and then the chorus is, like, so, like, sing-alongable. It's, like, so catchy. I wish I'd known that about the video kind of being, like a tribute, or however you want to word it, of another video, because I didn't realize that. I thought the video was, like, so punk. I thought the video was, like, really bold and cool, and... Yeah, I was super into this. I do, you know, John, I want to hear your take on this, and then I want to circle back because I have a question about the Hopeless connection.
My take is that I thought the video was very cool and very artsy, and I'm always a fan of artsy and weird. And I like how she's deliberately making music that isn't super easily listenable, and that it's challenging and it's kind of freaky and weird, and but it's weird with a purpose. As a song, I don't know if I would put this in my car and drive around just because it's somewhat repetitive and it is challenging. But this is not necessarily presented as just a song. It's presented as this weird, whacked out video. So I dug it. Am I a massive fan of the song in of itself? No, but I think she's doing interesting things. And I think the video is interesting. And I liked how, honestly, like, I shouldn't even worry about the commenters, but the commenters, like, totally, like, freaked out. They're like, what's this? I hate this. You know, I'm confused. You know, well, yeah, it's not some human flannel talking about whiskey. It's, like, challenging and scary. So she gets bonus points for that alone. You know what I mean? And so, I thought the video was very, very cool. The music in of itself, I thought, was a little too repetitive for me, but I would be interested in hearing more. And maybe an album could be extreme – could be – if I heard a whole album, it might be this weird, interesting, weird trip that I would dig. Go ahead. But Hallie, what was your question about the Hopeless connection?
Well, I wanted to just ask you guys if I'm like missing something here, because like I got kind of irked, and it's possible that I'm just I don't know, like being sensitive about it. But I got kind of irked when the last couple things I've read about Hopeless is it's been that they were like putting out music by women, or and I just something about me, I just had a knee-jerk reaction where I was like, ugh, like too little too late. You know, I just don't feel, you know, I just feel like Hopeless put out so much music by just like, it's just band after band after band of like four or five white dudes, and I feel like they kind of, a lot of labels, it's not just Hope, I shouldn't just jump on Hopeless, because I actually have loved so much music that came out on Hopeless, especially in the earlier years. And I know Lewis, and Lewis is like a good guy, but there was just like something where I was like, so what? Like, did it take like hashtag Time's Up? Like, were you worried about getting called out? Like, why now? I do feel like a lot of these classically like punk labels that put out music by punk white dudes, I do feel like a lot of these labels are kind of scrambling to diversify their roster, including, you know, like now trying to have more people of color or whatever. And I guess that's good. Like it's good. It's progress. I do want to see that. And yet there's like some part of me that's like, why did you wait until like you had to, like you had all these years to support women in music and to raise up people of color. And like, you didn't. Am I being too harsh about this?
I think that, you know, in general, like, you know, like a lot of punk bands are still male, like, you know, it's still a male dominated, I guess, like industry or whatever you want to call it. So I do commend them for trying. Yes, they're a little late, but at least they're trying, you know. I am giving them a little bit of credit. Because I think at this point, everyone is snatching up as many, like, you know, people of color or, you know, just females in general. But, you know, you kind of also have to, like, find the right fit for the label. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not just going to grab any person that has a guitar strapped on them, you know. That needs a label, because again, like, you know, I find it interesting that a lot of people are just going the route of self-releasing things, because mm-hmm. we still have that camp happening. You know, they would rather just put all their money into this and, you know, self-release it so that they have total control. So it's also possible that labels may like, people are just not seeking a label because they may, if they're a smaller label, they may not have money for, you know, large productions of things, you know? Yeah, you know.
Mm-hmm. I might disagree with you in that, like, maybe the label realizes, you know what, like, our label is not that diverse or whatever, so let's try to bring in some people that are that aren't like the kind of people we've had on our label forever. I mean, otherwise, what do you want them to do? Say, all right, well, let's just have white people and white dudes forever. That's that. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, I mean, I can understand the argument that well, you're not doing it because you want to do it. You're doing it because you feel it's the only economic option for you to do to survive. I get that argument, but I mean, how can we peer in their brain and see that, you know?
But it's like, I feel like I don't have to peer in their brain because there were years and years and years where there was great music being made by women and people of color. And these labels, I feel like if you were one of those bands, you would like send in your demo. And I feel like the labels, like their attitude was like, well, this isn't the kind of thing we put out. And it's like, well, what exactly do you mean by that? Like what you mean is that you just want to put out music by men. Like that's, I don't know. I've sounded off and I totally, you know, I totally hear what you guys are saying, and I'm actually happy to have that perspective. You know, I wonder if like the answer isn't like somewhere in the middle. You know what I mean?
Probably, but honestly, your statement there actually raises a really interesting point, in that you said, you know, in the 2005 or 2010 that they wouldn't sign, you know, I guess bands that were different than their roster. Would you agree that these bands are driven strictly by money, or nearly strictly by money? Labels of this level of Hopeless.
I don't know. Maybe that's it. Maybe it is. And I just want more from it. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So I'm saying, like, let's say they're like, well, and this is me speaking as a generic label of that size. Well, only white guys sell the level that we want to sell it at, right? So we're not going to sign someone that's not a white guy because it won't sell as much, you know? And so the question is, should we hold labels to a higher standard in that? Should we as music fans say we want more? Well, actually, I think I'm answering my own question, but should we demand more than, I guess, just profit motivation for the labels that we love? And the answer is yes, we do. We certainly do that with Alternative Tentacles. We certainly do that with Fat. We certainly do that with Discord for sure. But then here's the other question: is the labels that aren't bound by rules that aren't just money become the biggest labels? Isn't that interesting? You know what I mean? So how do you fight that issue? And I guess the answer is you do what people are doing right now and just, you know, making more of a quote stink about, you know, inclusion and diversity, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately at the end of the day, it is just, it's nice to see things changing. And I guess maybe I should just like take that as it is and just be happy about it. But there's just a part of me that's like, I can't help but be just skeptical. Do you know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
I hear you.
I guess even a little bit jaded, just like, ugh, like what is your real motivation behind this? This is just like, yeah.
I hear you. I'm skeptical of most things. I agree. Let's talk about something that we should not be skeptical of. Let's talk about something that we should celebrate and cherish and salute. Ellen Foley. She's putting out a new album. I think it's really only her second new album since the 80s. She put out one about 3 or 4 years ago, I think. The new album is called Fighting Words. And you say, John, who's Ellen Foley? Ellen Foley. If you don't know who Ellen Foley is, that's okay, but you should learn. Ellen Foley, first of all. On Paradise by Dashboard Light, that's Ellen Foley singing, Meatloaf classic. But perhaps more importantly with regard to punk, if you listen to Sandinista, if you hear a female singer, that's Ellen Foley. But perhaps even more importantly, or maybe actually less importantly, who knows, Ellen Foley's album, Spirit of St. Louis, is that a Ellen Foley record or is that an Ellen Foley and the Clash record? And the answer is an Ellen Foley and the Clash record because the backing band on that record, which no one seems to know even to this day, even though I talk about it all the time, Spirit of St. Louis album, it's the backing band for almost every single track is The Clash and Ellen sings. She also had an album produced by Ian Hunter, and she's just a pretty cool person that's done a lot of cool work. So I'm excited to check this out. Also, I think she's in like theater or something like that as well, or musicals. And so I'm excited to check this out, and we are going to have a bonus podcast interview with her, or maybe we'll have her on the proper one. You know, that's going to be sometime this summer. But I'm psyched to check this out. Ellen's cool. Hallie, what do you think of Ellen Foley?
She's like living and breathing like trivia. Like her Wikipedia, I finally started laughing because it was almost like she's like Where's Waldo? Like, she's everywhere. There's still, like, all these projects that she's had some connection with or some. She's super cool. First of all, the fact that she sang on Paradise by the Dashboard Lights makes her, like, that was, I didn't know her name at the time, but she was actually my idol for a big chunk of my youth because her vocals on that song are so sick. They're so awesome. But yeah, I'm reading up on her. And like, there's just so many hilarious little like tidbit weird facts about her. Should I stay or should I go is about her. Like, if you're old and you remember a sitcom called Night Court, she originated the role that ended up being played by Marky Post, which I assume means that in like the pilot of it, she was like she played that role. And then of course that show went on to run for forever. I know because it was always on and I was always disliking it. But she like missed out on like playing this. I mean, Marky Post became like a household name and I don't know how many people knew who Ellen Foley was at the time. Also, musical theater nerds. She originated the role of the witch in Stephen Sondheim's Into the Woods. When it did like its out of town tryout and then was replaced by Bernadette Peters when it went to Broadway. So there's like something hilarious to me about this woman's like bio because like it's just she's kind of everywhere in all these different like genres and there's just so many near misses for her. There's just so many instances in which she should have been like an absolute just flat out celebrity and she just like didn't quite like get over the finish line. It like kind of breaks my heart, but I'm just excited that she's still doing stuff and still making music. I think it's really rad. Also, she's making this album with one of the guys from Alice Donut, which is like classic, just like the most authentically New York, like punky, garagey, psychedelic-y, weird band. Like, so I love that she's like making music with one of the guys from that band too. It sounds pretty cool. Other people, Ellen Foley. Sorry, that was a diatribe, but she's like so fucking like. I feel like someone like punked me and like I feel like someone punked me and made up her Wikipedia just to delight me.
Well, so I did look at her Wikipedia as well, and essentially I felt really young reading this Wikipedia because I was like, oh my. I was like, a lot of this stuff was way before I was even born. But I kind of think, I was like, isn't that punk not to be famous? Like, in that, like, you know, in that X aspect? Like, you know, I was like, maybe she's just not about being famous. I was like, maybe she just wants to do her, be genuine about it, and then, like, you know, let all of these other famous people take on the roles that she's, you know, started or whatever. But, yeah, no, she hustled, and I commend her for all of the hustling because she literally is everywhere.
On top of that, she was in 4 episodes of Ghost Rider, the show about the spirit that helps youth solve crimes.
That's a true hustler there. You just said it.
Did this also make you feel very young to read about Ellen Foley?
It was, yeah, I read her Wikipedia page and, like, the story is like, oh, I think I know who she is. And then I read the story. I'm like, I have no idea who she is. So then, I read her Wikipedia page and, well, like, exactly. Like, oh, my God, she's done so much. Like, that's great. And her voice is awesome. And I think it's going to be a really interesting sounding album, especially with the person from Alice Donut and the guy from the Meccans. I think it's going to be really cool. So definitely going to check it out and have a lot of respect for her.
Well, listen, I'm excited to see Ghost Rider episode number. Here we go. Ghost Rider episode 1013. Alex has aspirations to be class president, but one of his competitors starts a smear campaign, putting up flyers and embarrassing personal secrets. One of the initial suspects is the new transfer student, Rob, because of his withdrawn nature. But that status changes once Ghost Rider... but that sta- satisfaction once Ghost Rider reveals himself to him. Eventually, Alex realizes that one of his many pen pals might be involved in dirty politics. It must be leaking info to the real dirty politician, Calvin Ferguson, whose main goal was to keep Alex from winning. I got it. All right, I'm going to do one more. And then let's see. The other episode that I have. Oh, here we go. Episode 51. A hacker who goes by the name Max Mouse invades Hurston School's computer's mainframe, causing frequent fire drills, threatening messages, and altering the grades of Jamal and Lenny. The team gets a crash course in the internet and its cruder and more basic form, including chat rooms and bulletin boards, sending Ghost Rider through a computer and phone lines in an attempt to catch Max Mouse and stop his reign of mischief, as well as catch the student, Janice Hall, responsible for infecting the system. Stars Ellen Foley as Ms. Kelly. Okay, we got one more story.
Sorry, Em, I didn't hear you.
Can we do a screening, just like an event where we just watch these?
Yes, we can.
Yeah.
I liked Sam's description of her as a hustler, because I do think that is like that is just someone that has been hustling for 40 plus years, just like making it happen however she can.
Should we have her on the show proper and do news with her, or do you think we should do strictly an interview with her?
Oh my God!
You should interview her just on the Ghost Rider.
Yes.
you think she would love that? You think she'd be like thrilled about that, or you think she'd be like pissed off and think I was clowning on her? Like, what if I was like, Ellen, thanks for coming on the show. An episode, in Ghost Rider episode.
Well, you know what? You should do one of that, and then you should do an interview. So it'll be two.
Yeah. Well, let's wrap it up with another freaky deaky kind of thing. The band Cheekface has released a track called We Need a Bigger Dumpster. And the track is off. It's a standalone single. And they last released an album called Emphatically No. I dug it. I actually dug it a lot. I thought it was kind of a cool no wave track that it flipped between no wave and pop punk and new wave. And more, this is definitely an M. Moore style song. It tells about this band, this track, and this giant loaf of bread in the band picture.
Well, actually, the loaf of bread is how I found the band.
Stop.
I love it.
I was looking up something else, and like a band posted something like, "Oh, Cheekface has a new song out," and I'm like, "What's Cheekface?" And I looked into the band, and that's their profile picture on like their social media too. So just like, oh my God, they have giant bread. They have to make good music. And I was right. So I think giant bread should be a staple now in all promo photos, because it like you see it and you're like, I need to know what these people sound like. They look like they have fun. But no, it was one of the best kind of surprises was how much I liked the song and like the karaoke like theme to the video was great too, and it's like drum solo, you know, like however many beats and all this kind of stuff. It was great. And when it goes to the you know, it's the vocalist delivery is just so like deadpan, you know, and all that kind of stuff, and then it gets to the everything is fine part, and I'm just like, yep, that's where I'm at. This is 100%, you know, kind of my headspace right now is just the everything is fine over and over again. And it's kind of like, it's calm, sort of, but they're frustrated and they're pissed off, but they're trying not to be. And it's just, it's great. I'm a big fan of the song, and I'm definitely checking more out from them, because that was awesome. What were your guys' thoughts?
So I had a roller coaster of emotions with this one. I started watching it going, what the heck is this? I did appreciate the bread, because yes, every band photo from now on has to have a bread in it, or at least a bread pillow. I don't care. Giant bread. Yummy. But after that, I was like, so after the what the fuck is this, it started getting repetitive, and I was like, oh my God, I'm starting to like this. What is going on? I kept on having that you know, the meme with the dog in the fire? Yes. Everything is fine, dog. Like, that kept on flashing before his eyes, and I was like, oh my god. And of course, I'm, like, listening to this, like, while I'm working, so, you know, my job is a hot dumpster fire right now, so I was like, oh, dumpster fires! This makes sense! Yeah, so, I enjoyed this. Thanks, M, for bringing it to my life, because really, this makes so much sense for everything right now, being in quarantine, probably staying in quarantine forever. You know,
I was glad it was a lyric video, right? Because the lyrics are kind of the best thing about this song. And I did feel like it did sort of capture something about this experience that we've all been living for the last year in a way that I didn't feel like I haven't heard other artists be able to do yet. It just captured something about how surreal life has been, because the lyrics are like, they are very surreal, but also they're clearly talking about how completely whacked everything has been. So yeah, I thought this was really cool. I mean, it felt more like indie rock to me than punk, but like, I love indie rock, so I was super into that. John, did you like this?
I like the beginning part. I like the part with the robotic voice and like the very sparse beat. It sounded somewhat no wave or early new wave to me, where new wave hadn't quite become poppy. Then you're right, there is that middle section, which was, my ears heard it as pop punk, but maybe indie rock is more accurate. I actually was hoping that part would be kind of like a little tougher or crazier. But that being said, I like the contrast and sounds we had here, and I'm interested. I thought this was cool, a cool track. And Sam's going to play a song. We're going to come back. We're going to wrap up the show, and Hallie's going to send us on out with another song. Sam, hit us with a tune.
Yeah, sure. So I'm on my ongoing quest of bringing more Asian bands to the world of punk news a little bit. So this new, well, it's not new, but this track actually comes from a band called Easel. They're from Japan. If you've heard of this band before, they actually did a split a million years ago with the Shook Ones. And that's how I found them, because they sound kind of like Kid Dynamite. They really love Lifetime. These are all things that I really love. So this is The Exposed Heart Tells Everything.
¡Vamos a matar!
and that was Easel. Any final words for the podcast listeners, Sam?
Don't be racist. Wash your hands and wear a mask, please, please, please.
And more, any advice for the listeners about the best way to crowd kill at a concert that's happening in the middle of COVID and no one's wearing a mask and everyone's jumping on top of each other? What's the best way to really wreck everyone that's trying to circle pit?
Show up in a hazmat suit with hand sanitizer sprayers and then just go and, you know, start like waving your arms and then you're like de-germing everyone.
Like an inflatable arm thingy?
Yes.
Well put. Hallie, but any last words, and what tune are we going to sail the listeners on out with?
I don't have any last thoughts, but I want someone to remind me, what's this video I'm supposed to watch, because it's what the Illuminati Hottie video was based on.
Untitled, How Does It Feel by D'Angelo.
All right. I'm going to look that up. I want to play, I don't know, all that Ellen Foley, and then I was thinking about The Clash, and then I was thinking about Joe Strummer, and then, I don't know, I'm going to play like an oldie Joe Strummer and the Mescaleros tune. This is called Coma Girl.
I was crawling through a festival way out west. I was thinking about love and the acid test. First I got real dizzy with a real rockin' gang, and then I saw the coma girl on the excitement gang, and the rain came in from the wide blue yonder. Through all the stages I wandered. Somebody was wailing off their head. Oh, nobody is ripping the teen scene dead. Thou was falling upon Desolation Road. So my love band at the last drop on the go. Let's siphon up some gas. Let's get this show on the road. Said the coma girl to the excitement gang. Into action, everybody sprang. The old drums were beating out too lang, too lang. Coma girl on the excitement gang. I'm on the Lisa on a motorcycle gang.
That needs to be a sound clip.
That was John's parting thoughts.